Ashenosen haMelech leYehudim aShebachal Iyev Iyer leHikoyel veLamed al Nafshem. HiKoyel veLamed al Nafshem. It means that haMelech, that the Bar Yerushalayim, the Bar Yerushalayim, has been megalot to us that these last few minutes before Mashiach comes, we have no etzah except leHikoyel veLamed al Nafshem. The Koil V'Lamed Al Nafshem, in order that a Yid should be able to be Oymed Al Nafshay, to have a Shaychus to who he is, we mail it to have a Shaychus to the Bar Olam. There's no choice anymore. We have to be in such a Malach of Lihi Kohel V'Lamed Al Nafshem, to join together as a Chevra, as a Chabura, as a Kehila. Ibn Eshoscher writes in Agud Akala, in Parshas Ekev, Hine liyois b'soif yomaya, liyois b'soif yomaya, that now that we are at the end of days, liyois b'soif yomaya, ha'neshomis hem k'tanei ha'erach, the neshomis at the end of time, or the neshomis, like the Tanya tells us from the Ekev at the end, and the neshomis like k'tanei ha'erach, are of lower value, but tzrichim ma'od l'stayeya zemizeh. But tzrichim ma'od l'stayeya zemizeh, we need very much to help one another. K'lo yaspik koyach ha'echad b'fnei atzmai. We can't do it by ourselves anymore. It's not shaykh for a person to do it by himself. L'hashlim tikunai. To be mashlim is tikun. Alkein, mamo itzvichim lezoya bedoris halolu, biahavas chaverim makshiv. So Bnei Sosa says, how careful we have to be, mamo itzvichim lezoya bedoris halolu, in these last generations at the end of time, biahavas chaverim makshiv. This nakuda of Ahavas Chavei Makshivim, as I understand from a distance, not that far, but from a little bit of a distance, I understand that that's what the Olam is working on over here. Ahavas Chavei Makshivim. Lihikohel V'lamad Anafshen. To come together, to, in certain ways, ignore some of the conventions of our past, and to realize, to open our eyes, that these last few minutes we have no choice. Likoil v'lamoid al nafshon. Bahavas chaveim makshivim. So I feel that even though I've only met a few of you, with some of the chaveh here that I know, of course, from home, but you know, sometimes it takes you a long time to become an old friend, but sometimes you can become an old friend right away. It doesn't take long to be an old friend. Ahavas chaverim makshivim, the love of Jews who are makshivim, who are trying to listen, who are trying to listen and to grow and to change. So Yoli mentioned a few things that would be kedai to talk about. I realize that I can't encompass all of them. I'd like to touch upon one important nakuda, which I think is kailal a number of the things that have already mentioned. It's a moridika gilui from the Soid Yishar, from the Rebbe of Geshen Henoch from Radzin, Schusig and Leina. Geshen Henoch said that Purim is a lashon of pirurim. These are pirurim, crumbs. Purim is a lashon of pirurim, crumbs. And he has a mahalach in his way. But I want to talk about it, l'fi inyanenu. What is the meaning of Purim is a lashon of pirurim, of crumbs? There's a mice that I've told over a few times in the Bismedrash. The first time I remember saying this over was actually by my children's Sheva Brachas. So it must be 10, 11 years ago. It's a mice of the Baal Shem HaKadosh that fits very much for a night, like tonight. It's cold. It's very cold. Everybody here knows that the Baal Shem HaKadosh used to take some unusual trips. Stories of Kfitzes HaDerech and so on. But the ik is that each time he would go on a certain trip, the Baal Shem HaKadosh would go to the Bais Medrash and he would say, you, come with me. But the Baal Shem knew that there were particular Yidden Tzaddik from the Chavraya that needed to hear something or see something, davke. And he would take them and they would go, and they never asked where they were going. And the driver also didn't know where he was going. Yadu. So it once happened that the Baal Shem HaKadosh went on a freezing, freezing cold winter night. And he brought some of the chevron. They went on a sled. Everything was snow and ice. And they went outside some place not far from Meshbiz. They went and it was a big, big lake. And the lake was frozen solid. And there were hundreds and hundreds of goyim. They were ice skating. They were skating on the ice. And of course you understand that they didn't want the Baal Shem HaKadosh to go over there. They didn't want to go there themselves. They wanted to go around. The Baal Shem was interested in something that was happening there by this skating rink, by the big skating rink by the lake. Now, it used to be that there was a custom, and my father's Aguzon Tzayin said he remembers such a thing from the Haim, that when it was time for their holiday, by the Goyisha holidays, so they had an Indian to go skating, and they would go and they would etch into the ice, they would carve into the ice, at Salem, the Avodah Zarah, they would etch into the ice the shape of the Avodah Zarah. And this was a big Indian by then. But of course, this is no place not for a Jew, and certainly not for the Baal Shem HaKadosh. And the Baal Shem insisted that I want to go, there's something going on over there, and I want to go over there. And the Chassidim just says, Rabbi, it's not a good place over there. Baal Shem says, I want to go. And they came, and even the Goyim were in this spell, that the Baal Shem came to such a thing. And everybody moved over. And the Baal Shem, for 1 second, was watching. He put his eyes down. And he was very misragish. He was very excited by this whole thing. And then he said, it's time to go back. And they went into the sled, and they turned back to Meshbiz, and they went home. When they got back to the Bais Medrash, nobody understood what happened. Obviously, that was the whole reason for the trip, was to go to this place. And to see Tzlomim, Tzelem in the ice. So Baal Shem HaKadosh says, I know that you're wondering what this was today, why we went. And listen to what he said. Baal Shem said that in this world, there's nothing that gives life as much as water. Water is the source of everything that we have in this world is water. We can't live without water. And water is gewaldig. All that we eat and that we drink and our entire chiyus comes from water. See? Even without the fizz, I'm okay. Everything we have comes from the water. That's only if the water is alive, if it's moving, if it has warmth to it. But if the water becomes frozen, then it's just a matter of time until somebody is able to go and to make an Avodah Zarah at Salem in the water and the ice. The Baal Shem said that when we were children, we had such a warm relationship with the Bari Olam, so warm and had a chiyus and was alive. You have parents that when they have a child, remember times that the children of Hashem have grown up, married. But there were hard days when they were little. Sometimes you say a strong word, and then you go and you see the child is sleeping. You look and you sit down next to the child, and your heart is broken because you remember that on the day that the child was born, and the baby was such a chiyus, and you were so happy, and now you find that sometimes you're too critical, you're too hard. Something has come, some ice, some coldness has crept into the relationship with the children. Same thing with other relationships, chasam kala, under the chuppah, then time goes by, ice, becomes ice. So the Baal Shem said that once something freezes and becomes ice, then there's no telling what could happen. It's just a matter of time till there's going to already be from that iciness and that coldness that could already be at Salem. It could come out already from that, the terrible, terrible of a desire. Everybody here knows that in this farm, not only is there a Gehenim Shel Eish, whatever that means, a Gehenim of fire, but the Sfarim tell us there's also such thing as a Gehenim Shel Shelig, a Gehenim of snow, a Gehenim of Shelig. We're in the sugya now of Ashakarcha Baderach. Ashakarcha Baderach means the coldness of Amalek. Ashakarcha Baderach means that there's a klipa, there's a tumma in the world that's called a klipa, a tumma of ice, of shelig, of snow, of coldness. And that klipa has the ability to take away from us all of our simchas achayim. I just dav marav in a beautiful besamedrish in the neighborhood. And I was looking around at the sweet faces when we were starting, the sweet faces of some of our brothers. And believe me, we could have just as easily been saying Nila as saying Marv. Could have just as easily been a Yukum Purkin as it was a Marv Aruvim. It wasn't that much of an afkim in it. And if you would have told, if you'd have given a knock to the guy and said, Rabid, you know, today is, you have to say Agdomas. He said, he would have opened up the Agdomas also. There's a klipa that has a way of ashakarcha of Amalek, of taking away all of the simchas achayim. The Rebbeinu Shlom gave us a bracha to have children. Not everybody is zoichet to have children. I deal with many, many couples that are waiting and davening for many years, and they go for its brachas, and they go to its soul, and they don't have such a bracha as children. You can wait many, many years to have children, and then once you have children, then something happens. Over the years, there's a coldness, there's an ice. I talk to children every day, teenagers, that they tell me, my parents don't understand me, they're no shaykhs to me. No shaykhs to me. I do everything they tell me, I try to be a good boy, I do what I'm told, it's no shaykhs. A husband and a wife, no shaykhs. Yeah, and at the same address, and they're married, and they have a ksuba. But in terms of the simcha, leibedekeit, being alive in a relationship, somehow, Amalek over the years, the Gehenim Shel Shelig, the Ashakarcha, Amalek somehow infiltrated, crept into their lives. And the very same relationship, a parent and a child, that's supposed to give us so much simcha, a husband and wife. Very simchem isha she'avta. And higher than anything, ourselves with the Baruch Shalom. Becomes cold. Loses its warmth. And we try to go through the drudgery of a day-by-day existence. Remember, I was once sitting in the Shtiblach in Yerushalayim. It was around 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. A regular, like a Tuesday in Tevis or something. And there was Nalti Yid over there, and closed the city, gave a kiss, and he says, Shain, Nachamarv, Puta, Nachamarv. Your whole life can become like that. You could turn around and you're 120. It's puta. What was it? Ice. The Gehenim Shel Shelek. Everybody talks nowadays about the Gehenim Shel Eish, with all the Kalim and Kalim Shainim, and all of the Taivas and so on. There was such a thing. But the only reason that the Gehenim Shel Eish has any impact on our lives and pulls us is because we're stuck in a Gehenim Shel Shelek. Davening is cold. Parents, children, husbands, wives, teachers, Rebbeim and the Talmidim, Ashakar Chabadarach. The Shaila is, what is the weapon? What is the weapon of this Klipa of Amalek of Ashakarach? How does it accomplish this? How does it do this? How does it have such an effect upon us? To take a Jew who's naturally a teva, warm and caring and loving, and that somehow this person becomes cold. So it's a Gemara in Megillah. When you give him a Lumbeis, the Gemara says, again, I'm not saying any chidushim, everybody knows all of this. You just have to chavei makshivim. Ahavas chavei makshivim. The Gemara says, Omer Eish Lakish, Golu if yadu lefnei misha omer v'ahayu ha'olam, she'osid homen lishkol shkolam ha'yisrael. Golu if yadu, the Rebbeinu Shel knew in advance, that in the future there was going to be a homen, who was going to take a huge fortune of shkolam, and like our enemies have done over the years, including not such a long time ago, to buy Jews, to take shkolim, lishkol shkolim yisrael, lefichach higdim shkolayin lishkolov. Therefore, the Baruch Shalom gave the mitzvah of machsa shekel to preempt, to somehow offset the shkolim of Haman. That's what it says in the Gemara. So the mitzvah of machsa shekel, which we have a zeichel machsa shekel, the mitzvah of machsa shekel, the Baruch Shalom gave us to somehow prevent the shkolim of Haman from creeping into our lives. That means the Gemara is telling us that the milchama, the war that's taking place between the malchus of Kirirus, of coldness, the malchus of Amalek, the malchus of Atzvas, of sadness, and Atzlas, and laziness, all of this comes from the Ashakarcha, Atzlas, and Marishchayra, all of that comes from Amalek, from this Gehenim Shel Shelek, that the milchama between this malchus of Ashakarcha, of Kirirus, and the malchus of Chamimus, of warmth, the malchus of Simcha, the malchus of Yisrael, that somehow that this milcham is a milchama between the shkolim of Haman and the machta shekel of Klai Yisrael. The shkolim of Haman versus the machta shekel of Klai Yisrael. Abayid, Haman comes with aseret alafim kika zaha, kika kesef, shkolim, a big amount of shkolim. A very, very powerful weapon. And that the Eibishter gave us something called a Machsa Shekel. And that this Machsa Shekel can somehow overcome and overpower and override the koyach of the shkolim, of all of the shkolim of Amalek of Haman HaRasha. So what does this mean? L'maisa. Tachlis, what does this mean? Says in Sfarim, Sifrei Musar, Chassidus, that we know from ourselves that it's the nature of a person to be in the spoil from something very, very, very big. To be in a spell from something very big. Meaning, when you walk into a Then you don't walk into a basement. You said, this is all. See, people have a teva to be nispol from something that's big and it's beautiful. Not only in Gashmias, but when it comes to Rochnias also. Became now a very, very big thing. Let's say it's a good thing to make siyumim and mesechtes. The oilim that's learning daf yomi, every couple of weeks, zoicha, if it's a bigger mesechta, small mesechta, zoicha to make a siyum. My father's always on side and says, you know, he said, I don't remember so many siyumim in Ungvar. He comes from Ungvar. I don't remember that we made so many siyumim in Ungvar. I remember that my father finished Shas 4 or 5 times, but I don't remember that we had such parties like this. I took him to the stadium in August. My first, everybody here made a siyum. I said, no, not everybody made a siyum over here. But there are a lot of people that made a siyum here. He said, we didn't make such parties. Sometimes maybe it looks a little bit. Somebody made a l'chaim, made a siyum. It wasn't such a thing like now. The smaller the person, the greater the need for something big. Big. Everything in America is big. When there's a Rebbe Shachasna, you can go on the streets, it goes on with the signs and with the torches and with the lights and with the who knows what's going on over here. You'd think that we're in Yerushalayim, already Mashiach has already come. It's a nice thing. I'm not chalila saying it's not a chashav azah. Big. When it comes to giving tzedakahs, do I have to tell you what's going on? It used to be that tzedakah was itself a tzniyaz dekazah. Now the way they have these signs and they take these phony pictures of tzaddikim and they put these pictures together, because now you can't believe pictures anymore, as you know, with the cameras, they could, doesn't mean anything. You could make one chasna and take pictures, and you don't have to take it any other chasna. You could put in the mechatonim like this and like that, and you could take them out also. It's very easy, the pictures. Everything is phony. Nothing means anything anymore. So now they make tzedakahs like this also. It used to be that somebody was giving tzedakah. He gave tzedakah. Now you have these moizdis that they put out these glossy, fancy booklets and pamphlets, and they plaster it over every newspaper and every wall. And they put out these l'shoinis ki'ilu that tzedikim are saying that this is the tzedakah. If you want to have points in Shemayim, and they even say things like this, and then they show also phony pictures they take, and they have tzaddikim kilo they're davening for you by Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel for 40 days. I'd like to see what's going on over there 40 days by Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel. They're davening for you 40 days. They're making their who knows what's going on by the kaisa by Rabbi Yonatan ben Uziel. And they found even new things. Sometimes it's a slow season, so they have to find some new schools or some new things they found already. They put in the newspapers. I see recently they came from the Tzaddik of Chaim Palachi. They made also in the newspapers they have a picture of a painting of Chaim Palachi. It was a big Tzaddik, a Kaddish Aliyah. But they make a picture that if you do this and you do this, and of course don't forget to send your check to this and this address, and we also have a credit card. This is the Tzaddik of Klal Yisrael, and they even say things like this. That if you want to be mekayem the mitzvah matanos lev yoinim, it used to be, you remember, you mekayem the mitzvah matanos lev yoinim. There's a, unfortunately, kol zman Mashiach hasn't come, liyachse, we have still such a thing as a yoinim, and you see a poor person and you help a poor person, or you give an itznis to go where you give. There are only certain matanos lev yoinim that you in Shemayim, they tell you that these are the matanos lev yoinim that they're gonna, and it's a hotline 24 hours, call now. 24-hour hotline. I'm the only one that saw these advertisements. 24-hour hotline. And I'm not saying that they're not. I'm not saying, God forbid, that they're doing something dishonest. Khalil, I'm not saying that it's dishonest. It's not dishonest. It's disgusting. It might be honest, but it's disgusting. Everything became like this. They want to make you feel like you're a pig. You're in some big worldwide project or something, and that this is going to save the whole world. And that you're, because a person gets excited about it. Because we're so small that we only end the spall from big things. Something that's big, something that looks like it's exciting. You could live on the block, and on the block that you're living on, there could be chalila, there could be children on your own block that they're dying. Hashem Yerachem. I don't mean from physical sickness, chalila. They could be dying. But if someone announces that there's a child that's missing, which is a mitzvah rabba, Then the whole, every Yid in America is going to come with their flashlights and with their machines, and they're going to go climb, they'll climb every mountain. And someone will tell you, Rabbi Yid, you ever take a look at your own kid? He's been dying for the last 16 years. Why don't you talk to him once in a while? Because then you don't have this, not with flashlights, not with all kinds of special hats. And with the, your child is 16 years old. When was the last time you had a shmooze on the Bahamas? Heart-to-heart talk. Really. When is the last time he felt that he had you 1,000%? Not that he was competing with some machine kid. That every time he's talking to you, you go like this to him. I'm in it. When was the last time you had a talk with your kid? But you're going to go rescue all the kids in the world. Or you're going to rescue this kid. Lo'alayinu, something's wrong. But that's the teva of a person. When it comes to tikkun amidas, so a person knows that he has, oh, there's a certain midah that's not a good midah. And he wants to be misakin this midah. I remember once when I was in yeshiva, there was a guy that you couldn't talk to him. You said a good morning to him. He says, it's a chashash lashon hara. He was walking all the time, the shmir zaloshon, you know, chavetz chaim. Anything you said to him, so people stopped talking to him. Because whatever you said to the guy, he said, I'm not sure. It could be a navak, it could be the rice, or the rabbon. So he said, you know what? They're not going to talk to you anymore. that was Elzman. Then after there was a Benazman, and the guy comes back and was sitting at lunch, and he says, a prosta the rice lashon hara luchaladeis. He said, so everybody just looked at him. This was Mr. Chavetz Chaim, you understand? So everybody looked at him, and he said, and he understood that it was strange what he said. He said about one of the rebellion, like a lashon hara. So everybody looked at him, he looked at us and he said, no, that was the last man I was working on lashon hara. I'm working this man on kas. That's already the last man was lashon hara. But it's a big project. And then if you're working on that, you go right away. I mean, when they started Daf Yomi, it's the best business for art school, right? When it comes to when it comes to brachas, this lady was telling me from the shul that she's been begging her husband to learn all the years. Learn more. Doesn't have time. He got all excited by the siyum. He got excited. He went to the siyum shas. He got all excited. And he put in an order for the whole art scroll shas in English. That's a lot of money. So she said to him, why don't you just buy brachas? Start with brachas. Let's see how it goes. He goes, no. For the whole shas he buys, it comes like in a truck. The art scroll comes, he has to get. So he's going to learn the whole shas. She says, try brachas. So I asked him last time he was like 10 blatant to Shabbos. He says, falling behind a little bit. I said, not even by Erevin? Usually they fall away by Erevin. Shabbos, most of the oilam is managing. He says, no, I'm going to catch up. And the guy says, that's like 60, 70 blocked. He says, I'm going to catch up. It's been very, very busy. I'm going to catch up. And this guy's going to catch up. He could have bought instead of wallpaper. They make art school wallpaper. You don't have to spend so much money. They just print it on the wall. And you can make it or paint it on the wall, the art school masechtas. But what? It's big. It's a big project. It's a big undertaking. And a person's, the netias and effort is to do something big. That's the nature of a person. But when it comes to something which is regular, Rabbi Yisai, just a regular shachris, a regular menchemar, a regular benom chaveroi, how you doing, as the family, to give a little bit of a smile to a person who's not feeling so good. When it comes to the little things in life, you know, I did this Shabbos, I did a very nice thing. I have two of my youngest, they're still in the house, two girls, and I decided I'm going to teach benching together with them. I never did it. And I said, you know, we're going to do something this Shabbos. And I said, Hazana Sa'ilam. I said, girls, what does it mean, Hazana Sa'ilam? The smart girls. I said, Hazana Sa'ilam. I start to fump for this. Hazan. First one said, it's a machlaikis. I said, no. What does it mean? That? I said, what does it mean? Don't the machlaikis. What does it mean, Hazana Sa'ilam? Kula betuba. What does it mean? What's the difference between chayin and chesed? What does it mean? Just a regular benching. A regular nice benching. We've been doing it our whole lives. We do it in our sleep. For that, they don't put big pictures on the wall, you understand? You don't have to. For that, you don't get any rewards. You don't see that they're giving out any special things. And I said to the girls, you know what? I'll tell you something else. A regular good benching that we should understand. Let's just talk about Tai Ching benching and to try to talk about benching. Nothing fancy. Just understand what it means, benching. And to try to think about what we're saying. And I said, I'll tell you something else. It wouldn't be a bad idea. It wouldn't be a bad idea every day to call your grandparents. What's a bad idea to call your grandparents? For 1 minute, call your grandmother. For 1 minute, call your Bobby. For 1 minute to call. 1 minute to say, I'm thinking about you. How you doing? You don't get any extra credit for that. You're not going to be written up in any bichel that you did something. You're not going to get any, they're giving the school now to the girls these chesed points. You're not going to get, anybody's going to know about these chesed points. But what about to call your grandmother, to call your grandfather? What about something like that, something simple and something small? The kids are, there are many, many crumbs. Tiny little crumbs of Yiddishkeit. And these tiny pirurim, these tiny crumbs of Yiddishkeit, these tiny crumbs of Yiddishkeit are filled with Kedusha. Are filled with Kedusha. I don't know what that noise is. Could someone, is that from here? These little crumbs, these little pirurim of Yiddishkeit that we don't think so much about, if we would think about them, and if we would stop and pay attention to the pirurim that we have, the opportunities that we have every day, we make a bracha shahakol niyah b'dvaray. There was a ma'aser from a Moshe Kabrina Schlusser Genaleinu, and there was a yid that came to see a Moshe Kabrina, and he came to their door. He was the next one in, and a Moshe Kabrina was sitting with a glass of water. And he asked the Yid to wait a second, and the Moshe Kabrina made a shahakal, and then the Yid came in, and he gave the kirtle and started talking about all of his sorrows. And the Moshe Kabrina said, your father was a much greater person than you. And he said, that's true, Rebbe, but why are you saying that? He said, because your father would stand outside the door, and when I would make a shahakal nibadvar, when he'd hear the words shahakal nibadvar, that everything is from the Baruch Shalom, he wouldn't come in anymore and tell me his sorrows. He would be able to go home. He wouldn't have to come in with the kirtle. He would leave. That was already good for him. Here you heard the shahakal, and you still come in with the kirtle. If we would stop and think what a shahakal means, what it means a shahakal nibadvar. See here, Rabbi Sai, this is the klipa of Amalek. The klipa of Amalek and the shirish and the root of all of the kriris, all of the atzvus, all of the aslus in our lives, is that we think that in order to impress the Rabbi Shalom, we have to come with aseres halof and kika kasev. You have to come with the shkolim of Haman Arasha. You have to come with some big, you have to make a siyim. Or you have a boy, this happens a lot of times, you have a boch who's learning in yeshiva, and he becomes a younger man. And now he's a younger man, he's not able to learn so much anymore, and he has to go to work. And when he's at work, he's thinking all the time that he heard the shmuzim from the Rebbe to say that you have to become a baki in shas. You have to know tois and nesivas, and you have to know all the toisus, and you have to know. And he's looking at himself, and he sees on himself that he spends most of the day working and with all kinds of things. And then he has a little bit of a chance. He tries to a little bit some mishnayis, a little bit of a yankiv, maybe a daf yomi, to something to salvage from the day. And he remembers hearing shmuz after shmuz that if you only learn a little bit, that you're nothing, you're nobody, you're worthless. Only somebody who was able to learn a lot, that person who's able to have a seres alof and kika kesef, a lot, the shkolim from Haman, and you're able to weigh in. And only if you come with a davening that is boikeya rikiyim, that pierces the heavens. And only if it's a davening, who knows, it's a reis l'das, an unbelievable davening. Then that's the only thing that the Rebbeinu Shlom has nachas ruach for. And that's the only thing in life that's worthwhile. But a regular amen yeheshmei rabba, a regular ashrei, a regular yishtabach, a regular smile to a friend, a word of encouragement to a wife, to a child, to be able to, we have a lot in our neighborhood because everything is far away. It's not like here, you have things within, you can walk. But in our neighborhood, everything's with carpool. You have to drive the kids to, you have to take the kids to yeshiva. Carpool. So would a person would a person ever think that this inyan of taking the children That this Indian taking the children to the car to yeshiva, that there's a big Indian. I remember seeing from one of the Svadish at Tzaddikim, Rabbi Ben-Zion Abishol, Zechar Levrach. He died a few years ago, it was a big paisik. Ben-Zion Abishol, he was walking in Yerushalayim past the bus, and the bus driver had his hand on the thing, you know, and he was yelling at the boy, Schnell, 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 or whatever, Maher, Maher, to get onto the bus. And he wasn't nice, the bus driver. And he was a Svadish. And he saw, all of a sudden, he saw that Ben-Zion Abishol was standing there. You know, the Svadish have Merdik, their Heretz for the Chachamim. And this bus driver stands up and he says, oh, Kvod HaRav, Slicha, Kvod HaRav, Mashallah, Rav, Mashallah, Rav. And he was embarrassed because Ben-Zion Abishol saw that he was yelling at the child, my hand, no, 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 no. So, Ben-Zion Abishol asked him, he says, Yehudi Yakar, Tairi Yid, he says, At Yodea, Mahamalacha Shalcha, do you know what your Malach is? So he says, I need a hug. What does he mean a nahag? I'm a bus driver. He says, so Rabbi Ben-Zion Abishol said, Ta'amin li. He says, believe me, kshata machzik et ze bayad, when you're holding that thing, ze mamash pticha, kamo pticha, shal aron kodesh. Psicha. Mamash, it's the psicha of an aron kodesh. That when you're opening for a Jewish child the door of the bus, you should have in mind that you're opening up for a sefer Torah, the same when you're opening an aron kodesh. That's what Ben-Zion Abishol said to him. Who thinks like that? A tzaddik thinks like that. That's why every moment of the tzaddik's life is big. Every moment of a tzaddik's life is big. Because when he looks at the little boy coming up the stairs and the yid is standing over the handle, he sees that this is a psicha nehila. A psicha by an aron kodesh. He's hoping for a child to come into a bus. It's not stam. But when a person falls into that machshava of Haman, v'yoma Haman b'libay, and v'yoma Haman b'libay, I have a few more minutes. I'm not.
You're not going anywhere.
V'yoma Haman b'libay, that Haman said in his heart, the Sfarim tell us, because the Magid Tzaddikim say, v'yoma Haman b'libay means that in every heart of a Jew there's a little bit of a Haman. V'yoma Haman b'libay. That there's this Haman that talks to the heart of a person, and he comes to be mevatel the pirurim. He doesn't wait till Erev Pesach, called chamir v'chamir. He comes to make a bittel of all the pirurim of our lives. What are the pirurim? A little bit of Me'yeh Hishmei Rabbah, a little bit of a Rashi, a little bit of a Taisvus, a little bit of a Ben Lamechaveiroi, a little bit you try today, today, this minute you try to work a little bit on this Midah of Kaz, a little bit you pulled yourself up to go to daven 2 minutes earlier. Normally you come to davening a little bit late. Today, you don't know about tomorrow, whatever happened yesterday, but today, this crumb, this moment, this pirur of my life, I'm going to make it purimdik. I'm not going to let Haman come belibi to tell me this is not worth anything. It's a machza shekel. What's a half a shekel? Aseres halofen kika kesef. That's an accomplishment. For that, you get up early in the morning. But for your davening, you can stay in bed a little longer. For your davening, what is the person like for your davening? For your learning, if you would learn the way you learned in yeshiva when it was alumdis, and you were alamdin, and you were able to say over a svara, and everybody was impressed with your svara, that's called learning. But for you to get up into mimav and sedra, and to look a little bit chumash rashi, and to try to ganva a minute that you have in between this and in between that, to look over a little bit of Rashi or Ramban on the parasha, that's a maaseh shekel. What's that worth? It doesn't have any value. What has value? Aseres halofen kika kesef. Big, big projects. What about tzedakah? What you're giving a little bit of tzedakah, what you could do, that's not going to build the yeshiva. The yeshiva can't open from your 50 cents, from your dollar. From that, you can't open a yeshiva. Or you're giving to some tzedakah. What's that tzedakah? They're collecting prutas. Machsa shakel. Join our undertaking, our project. Our project is building Klal Yisrael. You ever hear these? Everybody's building up Klal Yisrael. This is the Lashon of Haman. Haman is always medaba, always showing medaba gedoilas. Everything big, big, big lashonas. And what comes from all of that? That you're not machshev, you're machsa shekel. You lose your cheshik. You lose your cheshik for any little thing. It doesn't mean. What's the tachlis to say a kind word, to do this, to do that? I'm still no good. I still never became the aser salofim kikah kesef that I was supposed to become. I never became that. All I am is a machzah shekel. So because of that, the result is v'ata oyev v'yageya v'lo yirei lukin. V'ata oyev v'yageya. You lose your cheshik. From there, you're davening, you stop. You could take during this marav tonight. This is the only time in your life you'll ever have Matzah Zayin Adar. The only marav that'll ever be Tufshin Ayin Gimel in your whole life is now. So you're not holding cup to say the whole marav. Don't just say at least a harvest, say at least a marav of him. Say 2-3 words. Give him Achsa Shekel to Rabbeinu Shalom. He has a lot of hanor from it. Doesn't have to be the whole marav. A Achsa Shekel you could do. A half a shekel. What happened by the Chet HaEgel? Which of course very tied up into Purim and everything. What happened by the Chet HaEgel? The same thing. For whatever reason, they made a mistake. Moshe Rabbeinu is not here anymore. They made a mistake. Right, the Sultan had a Maisa, and they made a mistake. And Moshe Rabbeinu is Nalam, is not here. So then there came such a machshava. If Moshe Rabbeinu is not here, then I can't be an Eved Hashem. I asked a Yid that comes from this neighborhood, that I saw him in the summer. And he was acting in a way that was not becoming, and he saw me, then we were talking. And I asked him where he comes from, what's his. And he said that he remembers them all. He was by Rabbi Yoilish, by the Satan Rav Schussi, you'll never call you so. He was by Rabbi Yoilish. So, and what's since Rabbi Yoilish? It's already quite a few years. He said, since Rabbi Yoilish, that's what he said to me. Like this, he didn't even... I said, why is that? I said, you think that Rabbi Yoilish would be happy to, like that? Why did that happen to you since the Satmar Rav? He says to me, this way he says, well, since the Satmar Rav is Nifta. Since the Rebbe was Nifta, I don't see by anybody such things. So he touched already up all the tzaddikim, which is itself a dangerous, I'm not even talking about what that means, that a person should talk like that. But besides that, this is his way of understanding. The Satmar Rav Schussig, and it was a Seres Olof and Kika Kesef. Maskin. Top of the line. Can't get greater than that. The Satmar Rebbe. A Seres Olof and plus, plus, plus. And he looks at the Rebbe now down the block, or the Rav, whoever it is that... He says, nah, it's a Machzah Shekel from the Rebbe. That's not for me. I can't grow from such a person. I can't become great from such a person. It's a Machzah Shekel. So where did the Chet HaEgel come from? If there's a Moshe Rabbeinu in the world, then I'm a Yid. Anything less than a Moshe Rabbeinu, I can't do it. It's not for me. I need to have a Moshe Rabbeinu in my life. But if it's less than a Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm finished. This Rabbi Yisai is the Shorish of Gehenim Shel Shelig. Not with all the Taivis. That comes afterwards. Because it says in Pasuk, Avata Oyev Yegeya, no, V'la Yirei Elokim. If you don't have a regular shachas with a bren, if you don't have a regular benomach chaveru with a simchas achayim, if you're dead, if you're not alive, if you've frozen over, if the lake has already become ice, then the tzlomim, the tzelum, the avodah zarah, the taivis, with all the other things, but the taivis, then it's just a little bit down the road, the taivis. You're ready, a malik already got to you. A Malik doesn't go right away with this machine and this taiva and that taiva. The first thing that a Malik does is Ashakarcha. There should be a kriris in your life. You shouldn't feel the warmth of being a Jew. So how are we Mizgaber? And the thing is, one of the things that you told me would be good is the importance of every day. Positive every day and positive thoughts and the significance of bringing spirituality, Ruchnius and Tao, every day. And that's what we're talking about now. Zayitnu. The Baruch Shalom says to Moshe Rabbeinu. Zayitnu. Machsa shekel b'shekel ha-kodesh. Rashi says, Her aloi kimin matbeya shel eish. Niskasha Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu was having a hard time understanding this inyan. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him kimin matbeya shel eish. A fiery coin. Machsa shekel, kimin matbeya shel eish. Umishkola machsa shekel. That weighed a half a shekel. V'omar kezeh yitnu.
And the Baruch Shalom told Moshe Rabbeinu, "Kazeh yitnu." Now you know the Machzor Shekel was used for Korban Tzibur. Be'ikah, that means it was used for the Korban Tamid, right? For the Korban Tamid. What's the Korban Tamid? It's a kevizecha tasa b'boyik, it's a kevizecha tasa b'naboyim. That means tmidim, kesidrum. The Machzor Shekel was used not for any kind of a big Korban, not for the whole Seal Hashem and Seal HaZozel. It wasn't used for the big karbonis of a yontiv of a chagiga of a shalmich. It's a kevis echatas of a boike. It's a kevis shachris. A borshemer, an ashri yishtabach. It's a kevis hasheni tas of ben harboy. And the kevis hasheni, a regular mincha. Tmidim kesidram. That's the ikke that the Master Shekel was being used for. And the Baruch Shalom says, Zeh Yitnu. The Baruch Shalom says, the secret of overcoming Amalek, the secret of overcoming that Haman Belibai, the secret of overcoming that career is the coldness of Ben Olam Mokim Lom Chavero, the secret of that is to take a Matbeya Shel Eish, the Matbeya Shel Tefillah, of a regular Shachas, a regular Mincha, a regular Marv, a regular benching, a regular Brocha, to take that everyday event, a phone call to someone that would like to hear from you, a kind word, and so on. But to take that Machzor Shekel and to make it a Machzor Shekel that's on fire. And the only way that the Machzor Shekel could catch on fire is if you believe be'emunah shleima, that in the eyes of the Baruch Shalom, especially now, when we're by the Eikev of the Eikev at the end of time, like we know from Nabi HaKadosh B'Tor Rabbi Chaim Vital, and we know from all the tzaddikim, that b'zmanenu, any little bit of something that we can krechts out to give to the Bar Yoylem, was what by the Kadmoni would have been the biggest thing in the world. And the Nachas Ruach that we're able to be poiled now, with a little bit of a Machzor Shekel of a Matbeya Shel Eish. Kazeh Yitnu, the Rabbi Shalom said. What's the meaning of Zayin Adar? I said last night, Pashal Shiz. What's the meaning of Zayin Adar? You see that Moshe Rabbeinu had many names. Moshe Rabbeinu had many names. Moshe Rabbeinu was Avigdor and Yekusiel and Chever and Yared and Tuvia, Toiv. These are good names. You can't get a name like the name Tuvia, Toiv. It says when he was born. Toivu, Toiv. And yet when it comes to the Torah doesn't say Vayomer Hashem El Toiv, Lamer. It says Vayomer Shem El Moshe Lamer. Vedaber Shem El Moshe Lamer. So Chazal are bothered by that. He has nice names. Moshe has nicer names than Moshe. He has nicer names than Moshe. So why is it that the Baruch Shalom, of all the names, the only name that we call him that he's known by in Torah is Moshe? Bo yu'ra'eis charen shel goyim lechsodim. Shemukol shema shenikra ba Moshe Rabbeinu le'nikra elu b'shem Moshe shekarosoi basya basparai. Of all of the gewaldige names of Moshe Rabbeinu that have all kinds of deep meanings, all the Aseres Alofim Shekel, all of those names of Moshe, Yekusiel, Avigdor, Toivya, all of those names, the Baruch Shalom says, I'll tell you, I have my favorite. And when the Baruch Shalom has a favorite, that's what comes out in Chumash. The Baruch Shalom says, my favorite name is Moshe. I'll tell you why. Because there was this girl, Basya, Bas Parai, the daughter of Parai. And everybody in her world was living a certain way. And she turned away from that, and she did something good. And she stretched out her arm to help her baby. So Chazal came and said, "Boy, you raise charen shel goyim lechsodim. Shema kol shema shenikra by Moshe Rabbeinu leinikra lebeshem Moshe shekaros lebasya basparo." All of the names of Moshe Rabbeinu were big in yonim, big in yonim. The name Moshe is kimin amayim shisu. That she took him out of the water. A chesed. Basia didn't think when that happened that she didn't think she was going to be written up like this. She didn't think this was going to become headlines, that we're going to be naming our children after her. She didn't think such a machshava. She just said it's the right thing to do. It's a good thing to do. It's a kleinekeit, a Machzor Shekel, but I'm going to do it. But that's the name that he's called. The Baruch Shem says, I like that name. Moshe. Give me a Ma'i Mashiach. So I like that name. When Yosef HaTzadik saw the Indian of Yaakov, and saw the Indian of Esav and Russia, and Yosef and Yaakov even saw what Esav, the koiches of Esav, Yaakov even saw, he was afraid, what's he going to do? How could he possibly overcome this? We're living in a time where we don't know, B'derech HaTeva, based upon the things that are coming out with every day, B'derech HaTeva, it's not possible to understand. How could it be that Yidden are going to survive? That the children are going to be able to grow up? Not forget about being Erlich, that they should be normal. I remember when my son was becoming Bar Mitzvah, we were a little bit mishpacha with you remember the Debet Zina Rav, Zecher Tzadik Livracha? So, I remember I was by the Debet Zina Rav, and I took my son, Usher Zeilig, for a bracha. And he said to me, he said, Otzbach, so normala mensch. So I was a little bit hurt, you understand. I came a normala mensch. So I said, like I looked at him, and I said, a normala mensch. And he went like this. You ever see him? He went like this. Kule hai v'ulai. Kule hai v'ulai. He said, halavai, he should be a normala mensch. If it be normal, maybe something will come from him. And I didn't think back then that was the biggest bracha. A normala mensch? It's a chiddush. We don't understand how is it possible nowadays to be you're talking about Madragas, Bal Madragas, with what's going on, that you can't lift up your eyes and you think, no, I'm going to go to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, they're walking around also. I see Jews, the 90-year-old Jews walking around with the same thing. You can go to a Levi and you see the Oiras. By the Levi, you see people sit by a spadim. I was by a shiva this past summer, and there was sitting by the shiva, the Rav was saying Mishnayas. The guy's sitting a foot in front of the Rav. And he's going like this on the machine. A foot in front of the Rav. He can't say that he was following inside the Mishnayos. That wasn't, even though probably it has in there, he wasn't following the Mishnayos. Right? Like this. He's not even embarrassed. I was by a Pidyon HaBen. The boy, how many Pidyon HaBens do you get to go to in your whole life? The grandfather of the boy. The grandfather of the boy was sitting, it was the Pidyon HaBen. And not by the eating, by the Pidyon HaBen. The grandfather was also an old man. Was with the tchotchke doing all the, making all the. That's normal. If one of our grandfathers would come to the world, and if they would come to the world, now do you see the way that we're living? The way that we walk in the street, talking, there's nobody even next to you. The way that we live. Just to be a normal person. Kula hai v'ulai. How's it possible? How's it possible? So Yosef HaTzadik, Yaakov Avinu was afraid, Esav, Yosef HaTzadik, and the Baruch Shem told him one nitzoitz, one spark of your fire, right? By Parshas V'yeshev and Rashi. One little spark of the fire, of what? Of Zeh Yitnu, of a machzah shekel, but a fire dik a machzah shekel, can knock out the whole Esav, the whole Amalek. One thing. And now we understand why there's a var from the Chiddush Arim. Chiddush Arim says that Shekel is the Rosh HaTeivis. Shekel is the Rosh HaTeivis. Shachbucha, Shivtucha, Kumecha, Lechtucha. That's the Rosh HaTeivis Shekel. Shachbucha, Shivtucha, Kumecha, Lechtucha. Nothing fancy. Just the regular, everyday things of how a person lives. One of the greatest things, I'll tell you something for my wife, and my sister, she'd be embarrassed that I'm telling you, but I'll tell you anyway. That Amaisa, that many years ago, we were living in Far Rockaway, and it's not such a night, but what happened was that one of the babies made a terrible, terrible mess. It was terrible, all over the place. You know, it was the kind that when the father goes within 20 amas, he's ready, he says, this is not for me. So my wife had to be Isaac in this thing. It was terrible. It went everywhere. And my wife was there, and it was, you know, it's a mess. And I was in the next room, and I heard my wife, she didn't know that I was there, I heard her saying these words, Hareini Mekabalai, Mrs. Hussay, Shalvi Ahavt Levacha Kamaycha. I heard her saying that.
Afterwards, I asked her, I said, I heard you saying that. What were you saying? She said, it was so disgusting. She said, Moshe, I couldn't. It was like, I love, and it was just hard. And I didn't know what to do, so I was mechazing myself that this is also a Jew, my baby. It's interesting, no? It's also a Jew. So I was having a mekabel of Mrs. Esay, so lahatlu echad kamoicha.
Please. I'm working in a place that physically and emotionally challenges adults. And sometimes you got to clean them. And the first time I was there, I just couldn't. I went into the room and I walked back out. I couldn't do it.
Yeah. It's...
And then I caught myself as I was trying to do things, and then I'm going to clean the room. And I went in there like nothing happened, like I gave him lunch. It was no difference anymore.
Because the Machta Shekel became a Madbeir Shel Eish. It was a Madbeir Shel Eish, because when you take that moment, and instead of allowing that moment to descend into the world of Amalek, you stop and you said, this is a Yid. And even if it wouldn't be Yid, it's a Niver Betzel. It's a human being. And I'm Baruch Hashem, I'm healthy. And you can make a l'shem yichud to say I'm doing such a thing to give nachas ruach v'hi noyim Hashem l'kenei masi then kanei masi then kanei. This moment of a machsa shekel, a person thinks about this, is the biggest this crumb is the biggest nachas ruach for the Bari Olam, and that's what Yismach Yisrael says that by the mitzvah machsa shekel Davka says v'adal lo yamid. The Yismach Yisrael says that you shouldn't minimize the importance of a Machzor Shekel. Hadal lo yamid. When you had that moment in your life and you had to deal with that and it looked like it was a disgusting, low thing, Yismach Yisrael says, the Torah comes and says, Hadal lo yamid. Just because it looks like it's a shlechta thing, it's a disgusting thing, lo yamid. Don't minimize the significance of this moment in your life. The Rebbe Hashem opened up this moment in your life to do a taiva for somebody, to be goyim l'chesed, and it could be that b'sundin in Swansik, it's not going to be the big project, it's not going to be that you made the quadruple siyum and Bavli and Yushalmi and the Mishnah Yomis and the Rambam Yomis and the Tanya Yomis and everything. It's not going to be that. Who knows that after 120, that what's going to be the biggest thing is going to be you're the one that went in over there and you did that mice. I remember what you did over there. And that wasn't easy. Who knows? That's the Machzor Shekel b'Shekel HaKodesh. And that's why when Haman saw that Mordechai was Isaac in Hilchos Kmitza, you remember? And Haman said, oh, now I'm in trouble, because he says, milikumtsim holikumtsim kimcha ditchu, v'doch yaseres kikwe kasba didi. When Haman asked, what are you learning? They said, we're learning the halachas of Kmitza. By the mincha, what's the Kmitza? A little bit. We're learning. So then Haman said, oi, your little handful of the mincha is stronger and is going to defeat, is going to win over, listen to the words. That your Koimetz HaMincha is going to defeat my 10,000 Shkolim. Your Koimetz HaMincha. And what's the Korban Mincha, Rabbi? You said the Korban Mincha is itself a Mincha Zani. For a poor man's Korban, a Koimetz HaMincha means Pirurim, not Purim and not Elim. Pirurim, crumbs. So now we understand, I'm finishing now, I'm sorry, I went over. Ad l'yoda, the whole Avodah of Purim is Ad l'yoda. Because Ad l'yoda means that there are so many things in our daily lives that we would never ever think. We think that, like that moment that our friend is talking about, that moment looked like it was an Or HaHaman. It's an Or HaHaman moment. Ad l'yoda v'na Hormel of Moruch Manach. I never would have thought that was Takeh Baruch Mordechai. I thought that the biggest Baruch Mordechai was when I was saying Kriya Shema by Ne'ilah. And then by the Baruch Shalom, it's not like that. That was nice too. But you have a Machzor Shekel, b'Shekel HaKodesh, a Matbeir Shel Eish. This Maisa is Ad L'Yoda. I never thought. I thought it was an Or HaHaman. The Baruch Shalom was, no. What you thought was an Or HaHaman by me is a Baruch Mordechai. That Machzor Shekel is a Machzor Shekel, b'Shekel HaKodesh. The first Mishnah in Megillah begins, the Megillah Nikras, Yud Al, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, right?
That's the first Mishnah in the Masechta. And we know there was a whole takana over there, that because why? Because the Bnei HaKfarim, they were bringing something, some food and drinks. They had, so we made this, Chazal made a special takana, because a couple of Yidden, they're bringing drinks to other Jews. That's what the takana was. That they can be marked, them, Yudal, if you'd basically give the Gemara, the first line in the Gemara tells us. What to bring to be Master Rashi says there. To bring some water, to bring some food. And for that, Chazal make a whole takana, the Kriyas Megillah. You know, Kriyas Megillah, all the Oilemus, all the Malachim are shaking from Kriyas Megillah. And what? They make a takana, that a Megillah Nikus, Yidal, if you base your Gimel, why? Because they're Yidden, and they're getting paid to bring these. That wasn't for free. They were getting paid, but they're coming with water and with food, and they're helping other people out. And Megillah Nikus, Yidal, if you base your Gimel, the Chazal made a whole takana. Because of what? Because of such a thing. I want to end by sharing with you something that changed my life. I'm not exaggerating. I don't know if someone of the chevra here from Shul, I read this by Yizkor maybe 15 years ago. I want to share this with you. It's going to take maybe 6 minutes. I want to read to you some of the Lashonis. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nehi Bidvar. Amen. There was a Yid by the name of Jay Litvin. Anybody ever hear of him? Jay Litvin. He was a very talented writer. He was a Baal Tshuva. He was only Zoiche to write, I saw myself maybe 7 or 8 essays, articles that he wrote. And Nebuch, he was nifter before he reached the age of 60. He from the machle he died. And somebody from the shul gave this to me. And it's called "How a Stupid Little Ruler Saved My Life." You know what a ruler is? Saved my life. Just try to pay attention, because it's hard to listen when someone's reading. I didn't photostat for everybody, but listen. You could probably get this with the pressing of buttons. Jay Litvin. He says like this. What does it mean to be indispensable? Binyamin, you heard this? No? What does it mean to be indispensable? You know what it means? Indispensable means that everybody, you know, something that you can't do without. Indispensable. What does it mean to be indispensable? For most of my life, I've asked myself that question. Maybe not in those words exactly, but I've always had this feeling that there was some purpose to my life uniquely destined for me and me alone. I always felt that. Now, he remembers, I remember as a young man in my early 20s sitting under a tree. He was looking out the forest. He was in Woodstock, New York, during what some call the Woodstock years. That was a crazy time, that time. And that whole mice that happened over there, it was crazy. It was a simon of those years. And they defined that period of time. I was in the 60s. Woodstock and all the drugs and the sick and crazy of the music and everything, and he was mishtatif for that. He wasn't from days of pondering life and destiny, of feeling free and unfettered, of infinite possibilities. He was sitting under the tree by Woodstock. I was young, single, and without children. Money was inconsequential. Either it was easy to acquire it or it didn't matter much. And there I was sitting under this tree, wondering what it was all about, wondering why God put me on this here earth anyway, wondering what I was supposed to do with myself. So he says I wasn't religious at all, but I believed in some sort of a God. And at that moment, he says, I was asking God. So I sat there thinking about this tree, and I began to envy it. I envied its lack of confusion. I envied it for not having an identity crisis. I'm sitting by a tree. I'm jealous of the tree. The tree doesn't have is not confused. The tree doesn't have to figure out what's its purpose. And I don't know what my purpose is. And so he says, I did what any young man in my position would do. I began a conversation with God. I began to talk to God. He said, I used to do this. I used to speak to God. And in my conversation, I did what I often do when I talk to God. I complained. I asked him why he would give this tree a life of purpose and leave me in the dark. I requested that I be given as much clarity as this tree about the purpose of my life. I told God that just like I was sitting here appreciating this tree, I too wanted to be appreciated. And I wanted that appreciation expressed to me in clear, simple terms. I think, if I remember correctly, that most of all, I just wanted to know why God put me here so that I could get on with doing whatever I was supposed to be doing to fulfill my purpose in life. And he goes on to say that God didn't answer me that day. I had no revelation. And years went by, lots of searching and seeking, and more conversations with God. Within these years, he goes on and says, you able to follow?
Yeah. Yeah.
Within these years, I came close to Torah, discovered the teachings of Chassidus, he became a Lubavitcher, and certainly felt closer to having discovered my purpose than ever before. But to tell you the truth, I still didn't have that kind of crystal clear clarity of purpose that I had hoped for that day under the tree. Actually, it wasn't until one day during the months I was undergoing chemotherapy, Nebuch, that I had the moment of clarity I was looking for. And believe me, he says, during those chemo months, I wanted this clarity just about as much as I ever wanted anything in my life. It was vitally important during those days of weakness and fear to reach some understanding of what my purpose was on this earth. What I was sent here to accomplish, the turf of my indispensability, what made me indispensable. First, let me tell you that now I'm nearly 58 years old. I think he lived to be 59. I'm nearly 58 years old. I have a bunch of kids. Life has changed a lot since those under-the-tree Woodstock days, and I love every inch of every change. Among my seven children is my little 8-year-old Dovi. He's the youngest. My oldest boy just got married. The other morning, little Dovi was having a crisis. He couldn't find a little ruler he used to do his geometry, his math. He couldn't find the little ruler. He was searching all over the house for it, and he was late for school. He was crying because he was having a test that day. And if he didn't bring this little ruler, not only would he fail the test, he wouldn't even be able to take it. He was facing what in his life would be considerable embarrassment and humiliation. I was about to leave for an appointment and was running late because of spending all this time helping Dovi look for his little ruler. But he was frantic and I just couldn't leave him. When finally in defeat and tears we decided that the ruler was a lost cause. I looked down at his sad little face and decided to drive him to school. He wouldn't have his ruler, but at least he wouldn't be so late. Hopefully I had enough time to drive him and still catch the train to get to my important appointment. We scurried down the stairs together, him still sniffling about what was going to happen at school, me rushing and hoping I wouldn't miss my train, but mainly feeling really bad for my sad little boy. We quickly got into the car, buckled our seatbelts, and just as I was about to reverse the car from the parking space, I stopped. I had this moment. I looked at my son, took a deep breath, and knew then and there that I was not going to make my train. I wasn't even going to try to make my appointment. Instead, I was going to drive straight to the closest store and buy him the little ruler he needed. And then I was going to take him to school, park the car, go inside, and talk to his teacher so he wouldn't get in trouble for being a little late. It was a crystal clear moment. And once the decision was made, I carried through these actions without any doubt nor hesitation. When I told my son of my decision, he smiled, squinted his little eyes in a sort of botched attempt at a wink, sat a bit straighter in his seat, and looked out the window at a world that had just gotten quite a bit brighter. However, shortly after buying the ruler, talking to the principal, leaving my son, and calling on my cell phone to postpone my appointment, doubts began to attack my certainty. He was going to get in trouble. He just missed, this big appointment. Driving back home, I began to berate myself for my choice. How could I blow off an appointment just to buy my kid this stupid ruler he needed for a stupid weekly math test? By the time I pulled back into the parking lot in front of my house, I was in turmoil and just sat there for a while. And suddenly, from out of nowhere, I began to smile. And then my smile turned into a laugh. And then my laugh became a glow that emanated from my heart up to my head. That's where Amalek sits, in between the Tanya says, in between Am Melek, Malika, in between here and here. And a small, and he says, I began to laugh, became a glow that emanated from my heart up to my head. I realized that I was, in fact, quite proud of myself for the choice I had made. And I did in this moment what any father in my position would do. I began a conversation with God. And I asked him, who needed me more at that moment? To whom was my presence and attention the most crucial? Who else would have gone and bought my son that ruler? Who would have even cared? Do you see, God, how much my children need me and how they will need me for many years to come? Can you see, dear God, that I am the only father my children have and that this is without a doubt the one area of my life where I am clearly and with certainty irreplaceable and indispensable? And as I continued this conversation, attempting to convince God of my absolute indispensability, requesting that on the merits of this indispensability, he cure my cancer, I had the feeling that this stupid little ruler was keeping me alive. From that day forward, a new awareness and a new prayer entered my life. I began to notice dozens of indispensable moments every day. And as I became aware of these moments, I would attach to them the same prayer. Please God, can't you see how much my children need me? How important it is to keep me alive. Heal me. Heal me. This prayer would emerge whenever my children and I would share a smile or a goodbye kiss. When we sat and talked together about their life or problems at school. When I would tuck them in bed or cuddle with my boys under my talus during Birchas Kahanim. When we would sing at the Shabbos table or light Hanukkah candles. Or when I would go to their school and talk to the principal. These were moments that had occurred hundreds of times before. Pirurim, crumbs. Machsa shekel. Lots of them containing inconsequential things like lost little rulers and misplaced bobby pins, bruised feelings, moments of disappointment, a math problem solved. Only now they were crucial moments, each accompanied by my davening. Now they were escorted by an awareness of the absolute decisive role they were playing in my children's lives and in mine. These were moments, I believe, that were keeping me alive. In these prayers, though short and silent and barely discernible, I desperately tried to convince God of my indispensability. Like a lawyer, I plead my case, beseeching the Almighty with the full intensity of my love for my children, that in His mercy, He allow me to fulfill my purpose for many, many more years. For you see, I have become like a tree. And just as that tree back in Woodstock, just as that tree once supported my back as I leaned against it, so do I now support.